Hey, this is Breck Palumbo with DistressedPro.com, and I wanted to just introduce this podcast. Troy Fullwood and I had a little bit of trouble with our audio, but we got it sorted out a few minutes in, so I'd encourage you to go ahead and listen all the way through, because if you do, towards the end, you're going to find Troy's going to reveal one of the ways that he uses to find notes to buy from private sellers. So please bear with us. I hope you enjoy this podcast, leave a comment below. We'd love to hear from you. All right. Good morning. This is Breck Palumbo from DistressedPro.com for another episode of our professional podcast series. And today I'm really pleased to have somebody who is going to speak about probably the most popular topic on, certainly in the Distressed Pro community today, and that's investing in notes. Troy Fullwood, who's the owner of Pinnacle Investments in Chandler, Arizona, has operated Pinnacle Investments on a full-time basis since 1997. He's written over 75 articles on real estate investing, spoken at 50 industry conventions, as well as participated in 10 radio talk shows about real estate note investing. Pinnacle Investments is a nationwide principal buyer of first lien performing and non-performing real estate notes. He's assembled a team of professionals whose main focus is to quickly assemble and close transactions. And that's a good thing, because he's done over 11,000 real estate note deals since 1997 through a combination of both single and bulk transactions. He previously ran a multimillion-dollar private equity fund that produced a 92.6 IRR for himself and the investors that were involved before he sold in 2008. His core focus, and the core focus of the fund, was purchasing first lien, non-performing notes, and modifying loans so that people could stay in their homes, and had a huge success doing it. He's also established many referral business relationships with diverse types of real estate investors, and he attributes his success to creativity and persistence in problem solving. Troy is active in his local community church, as well as community issues in the cash flow industry, and he is a respected teacher and speaker in the industry. Again, he lives in Chandler, Arizona, and he's got two boys, a dog, two turtles, and two tortoises. So good morning, Troy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me this morning, Brad. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's our pleasure. And I'm really happy to have you on here, because I scour the web and the industry looking for people who know something about notes, because it's like it's this mysterious other side of real estate that people are just now discovering. So I was very happy to come upon you. And I'm very happy to have you here to talk to us about it.
Well, I'm pleased to be here as well. I'm very excited to share with everybody this morning about this industry and the power of notes, and looking forward to getting started.
So why don't we just dive right in? I know you've got a lot of experience in the full gamut over the last 14 years or so. So why don't you just kick us right off, and most of the people who are going to be listening to this, they already know what a note is. In case someone's catching us on iTunes or somewhere else and this is their first time listening to a podcast, why don't you start by introducing sort of, you know, what a note is, you know, maybe briefly, and then lead us into why you invest in them, and you know, if you have time to talk about some of your strategies, that'd be great.
Wonderful. The way I like to represent notes, or the way I like to explain notes, is that they're really just a glorified IOU. And one of the things that you know, everybody knows what an IOU is. I remember in elementary school and stuff, you know, a buddy would buy you a candy bar, so you would basically have an IOU to buy him a candy bar somewhere down the road. And that's one of the things. That's kind of the best way to describe it, because if you really get into the nuances of it and the legal mumbo jumbo and all that other stuff, it can become very confusing. And it usually does become very confusing and overwhelming to most people out there. And that doesn't mean people aren't intelligent and smart. What it means is that when you start looking at the legal aspect of it, it really is just saying between, like, you and me, Brent, if I sell you something that you're going to pay me back. And then, you know, of course, you get all the attorneys that do all their fancy stuff as well. But at the end of the day, it's really just a glorified IOU. Notes have been around since the inception of our country. When my great-great-grandfather sold land to a neighboring farmer, they would create an IOU. They would create a note. And that note was designed around whatever they agreed upon. If it was a monthly payment, a quarterly payment, an annual payment, whether it was interest only. And a lot of times back in the day, they didn't charge interest on notes and things like that. It was just, if I bought a piece of land for $1,000 from you, then I would pay you that $1,000 in payments over time. And it was just that simple. Now, because it started off that simple, in such a simple manner, what's happened over the years is it's become, how do you say, more regulated. And the banks realized very early on that, hey, if we lend money to people to buy homes and stuff, then we can actually make a lot more money than actually owning the real estate. And a lot of people think that banks are in the real estate business, and they really are not in the real estate business. What they're in the business of doing is lending money. Now, investors, they're in the real estate business. Investors like to go out and homeowners, but they like to go out and buy something, a piece of property, and they go about the process of improving that property, ideally buying it below market value, adding value to it through improvements and upgrades, and then selling the property off in the near future. That's the cycle of real estate. The cycle of a note is very simple. I'm going to lend you money, and in doing so, you're going to pay me back on a per month or quarterly or annually basis. In doing so, I'm simply just in the money business. And a lot of people think, well, in order to create a note, you got to have money to create a note. And that's just not true. You just have to have something of value. Now, money can be obviously something of value, but so can a piece of real estate. And if I go out and I purchase a property, let's say I purchase that property with money from my IRA. And in doing so, I buy this property, and I put carpet and paint and all those wonderful cosmetic things that really bring beauty to the home and upgrade the value. If I have a buyer that's interested in buying that property, that buyer can't qualify for traditional financing for a number of different reasons. Maybe they have a bankruptcy on their credit. Maybe they have a foreclosure on their credit. Maybe they just started a new job. Maybe they just transferred from across the country. Maybe their income level won't support traditional financing. Maybe they don't have enough money down in a traditional environment. There's so many different things, but those are probably some of the most popular things that keep people from getting traditional financing. Some people don't want to do traditional financing because maybe they're self-employed, and they don't want to give over all their financial records to a bank or an institution because maybe they haven't been in business for, you know, 3+ years or 4+ years, whatever the bank is requiring. So there's a lot of things that keep people from falling into that traditional financing arena. That doesn't make them a good person or a bad person. I don't look at things that way. What I look at is, okay, what do I have to work with in conjunction to where it is I want to go? And if I find a house that my family would love to live in, then I can go over there and I can work with that seller to ask that they would owner finance that property back to me or carry back the note. Some people call it owner will carry, owner financing, seller carry back. There's a lot of different cliches, industry cliches that are used, but they all point back directly to one common task and or action, and that is that whoever owns that property is going to extend basically a hand of credit or an extension of credit to another individual to purchase that property with the intention that that person is going to make payments over a period of time. Now, the beauty of that is that when two people are sitting there discussing something, and Brett, you could probably attest to this being in the business that you've been in for years and years, when a property owner and a property buyer are sitting there talking to each other, they can navigate through whatever challenges may exist.
Sure.
Whether it's a credit challenge. Yes?
I'm just agreeing with you, yeah.
Oh, okay. Whether it's a credit challenge, maybe it's a down payment challenge, maybe it's a years on the job challenge, maybe it's self-employment challenge. And the funny thing is what's a challenge to an institution may not be a challenge to you or me as a property seller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a buyer's got, say, 10% to put down, that may be acceptable to me as a property seller, but to an institution, they may require 20% to be put down.
Okay, we were having some technical difficulties there. I think we're all set, though. Now, you sound much better to me, Troy. Are you? Do I sound okay over there?
Yeah, you sound awesome.
All right, great. So let's roll from there.
All right, thank you so much.
Sure. You were talking about seller financing when we took a pause to correct that.
Yeah, thank you very much. So as I was mentioning, in the art of seller financing, you know, in selling a property, when two people are sitting down across the table from each other, they're going to be able to navigate through the putting and assembling that transaction very quickly. Unlike if you were to go into a bank or an institution, you know, you would speak to a loan officer or an individual in that institution. They would request all kinds of stuff from you. You know, hey, Troy, go get all this for us. Fill out this application. We'll run your credit. Give us $350 for an appraisal, and then you need to bring us back a whole bunch of paperwork. And when you get that paperwork back, then we'll send it to a processor who will then take it possibly to a loan committee. And at that point in time, we will give you a yes or no answer. Well, that ultimately could take 2, maybe 3, sometimes 4 weeks, depending upon how quickly you can get information, one, back to them, and then, two, how accurate the information is, and three, if the information even fits what they're looking for. So you're left with a lot of question marks as to what in the world's going on here, which is, and I'm going to kind of go off on a tangent here, which was one of the issues with the collapse of the subprime market is that they made it very, very simple for everybody to get loans. As I like to say, if you could fog a mirror and sign a document, you could get a loan back then. And
yeah, sure. We call them pulse loans.
Pulse loans, absolutely. You know, it's nothing like getting a cup of coffee at Starbucks and a mortgage loan at the same time. You know, it was all that was accomplished by 8 a.m. everywhere. Right. So it was great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was an amazing time in American history and the financial world, and a lot of things were happening. The excitement was there, and the buzz was on, and people were making money, and they were building houses and building net worths and all these things that were happening. But one of the things that people don't realize is behind the scenes, owner financing was still taking place. Back there in the day, when I say in the day, I'm talking like from about 2002 to about 2006, there was over 14% of all real estate transactions were done with some form of owner financing or owner will carry.
Really?
Yeah, even back in the day. So contrary to popular belief, people thought, well, everybody could get a loan, so everybody just went and got a loan, and in getting a loan they were happy and they would go to the bank to do these things. And that just wasn't the truth, because as long as there has been real estate lending, there has always been challenges. And when I say challenges, I mean there's always been foreclosures. Even in the greatest economies, there's been foreclosures. Even in the worst economies, like what we went into, obviously foreclosure spiked, which got everybody's attention. But even in the greatest economies, there were still foreclosures. So with foreclosures became credit challenges. With credit challenges came other additional buying challenges. Because when a person goes through that cycle of losing a house or going through bankruptcy or getting a divorce, whatever it may be, it doesn't make them a bad person. Good things happen to bad people all the time. But at the other side of it is, how do they restart their life? How do they re-jumpstart their life? And one of the ways that people figure out when you're going through that cycle, that season in life, what I call a season in life, is that you can go out and buy a home with owner financing. Now, I'm not saying that owner financing is an area that attracts nothing but poor credit buyers or people down on their luck. That's not my point there. But that is a portion of what happens in the owner financing business. So what does that mean for you and me? How do we capitalize, or how do we work within the current condition? Well, right now, the 26% of the real estate transactions being done in America are being done through owner financing. And this information comes from Fidelity Title, who tracks all of these real estate transactions nationwide. And in doing so, what we're starting to see, because of the capital markets being what they are, in other words, the banks are much more tight-fisted with the money. They're not handing it out like they used to. People have additional credit challenges because of loss of jobs and other personal challenges that they've gone through, or personal seasons that they've gone through. And with that, between that and the fact that the banks are not just easily handing out money, people are starting to figure out other ways to jump into either home ownership or getting involved in the real estate business as an investor. Now, home ownership, it's a great time to buy a house in today's economy. I live here in Arizona, and house prices are down 80%. When you can buy a piece of property below what the replacement cost is on that property, that's a good buy. No matter what the market is,
sure,
that's a good buy. You're not going to see, a 30% increase the first year of ownership or the first week of ownership, which is what people were so excited about back in 05 and 06. But the simplicity of it is that it's still a great time to buy, and it's a good time to start the rebuilding process. I know a lot of people have lost money in their 401ks and all that kind of stuff, and one of the best investments they can do is home ownership. Buying at the low, selling at the high kind of thing, and maybe we'll learn some of those things. But I'm not here to really talk about that aspect of it today. But the beauty of notes is that you can buy real estate through owner financing, and you can sell real estate through owner financing. All it is just a glorified IOU. And you don't have to go through all the procedures and hurdles and the challenges that you would have to go through under traditional means. It's very simple. Brett and I are selling a house. I'm selling a house to Brett. Brett and I sit down over a cup of coffee or a nice tea, and we discuss, okay, here's what my sales price is. Here's what my down payment is. Here's what the payment per month is that I'm going to offer you. It's a very vanilla deal. I very seldom ever see prepayment penalties or anything like that in a transaction. I do see a lot of balloons payment styles, but in doing so, even the balloon payment notes are typically 5 to 7 years out. It's not a tomorrow thing. So there's plenty of time for an individual who would be buying that home to, how do you say, resuscitate or rebuild their credit, to deal with any credit challenges they may have, and then in turn to 2 or 3 years down the road, or maybe a year down the road, go out and do what's called a rate and term refinance in the traditional market, which obviously rates would be substantially lower traditional financing, but you're going to have to jump through some hoops. But in a rate and term arena, you don't have to go out and shell out all the paperwork because you've already proven that you can afford to make that payment on the house. So it's a great way to go out and acquire
just
real estate.
A question for you there then. Are you sourcing, or I should say, are most of your notes coming from origination? Are you, or are you buying them, where somebody's already originated? Tell me a little bit about that.
No, that's a great question. I would say about 45% of our note deals that we buy are less than 3 months old. And they used to be noted back in the day as simultaneous closings, and we used to do a ton of simultaneous closings. We don't do simultaneous closings at the rate that we used to, primarily because it's we're looking for people to have a couple months worth of payments under their belt. And with that, what we then do is we go in and we purchase it probably at least 2 months worth of payments between the second and third month. In doing that, what we've been able to do is to help investors go out as they've gone out, they've purchased the property, they've rehabbed it, they put it up on the market, they found a buyer, but that buyer can't get traditional financing. So in the spirit of not losing the deal, they'll go in and they'll owner finance that particular buyer, they'll carry back the paper on it, and then they'll turn around and they'll sell that paper directly to myself. We do buy some traditional financing type products, but that's usually stuff that's typically a year or two older, and the banks don't have the exit strategies that they used to. So ultimately, they'll bring that paper to the marketplace, give us an opportunity to look at it and price it out, and then possibly purchase it. Yes.
So how are and I don't want to get you too far off track, but I'm interested to know. So how are investors who are holding paper finding you, or how are you finding them?
Well, a lot of what I do is what I call grassroots marketing, where I'm out talking to investors and through real estate clubs. I also find a lot of opportunities on the internet. You know, as an example, if you were to go to Craigslist today and just type in, go into real estate, just say the Phoenix Marketplace, go to the Phoenix Marketplace and type in owner financing under real estate, and it would pull up over 300 homes that are just on Craigslist that are available with owner financing. Now, 300 homes may not sound like a
home. I've never thought to look there. That's pretty good tip. I like
it. If you went to, I don't know what every marketplace is like, but I know that if you were to go from marketplace to marketplace, you'd probably have some pretty substantial numbers and some pretty substantial opportunities. And when I look at that and I see, okay, there's 300-plus homes that are available for sale in the Phoenix marketplace with owner financing as an option for purchase, then I can in turn contact 300 different people. Now let's just say that there's really only 150 because they're duplicated ads, and these are ads just from today back to about December 15th. So you're talking about 45 days approximately worth of ads. But in that 45-day time period, let's just say everybody put up two ads, so we cut it down to 150. As an investor or as a note buyer or somebody that was looking to make money just flipping notes, they could in turn contact those individuals and see if there was an opportunity to purchase the note once it was created. Now, the beauty of this is, and the underlying golden nugget, is when you contact these individuals, if they're putting this up as an option, chances are they know a little bit about owner financing or they've done it several times before. So they already have this owner financing tool in their real estate tool chest as a means of how to liquidate and how to go about liquidating their pieces of property. No matter which real estate investor you talk to, it doesn't matter if they've got $1 million to play with or $10 million to play with. Once they deploy that $1 million into buying real estate, they're essentially out of business until they can sell that real estate. So it's their motivation to turn those properties as quickly as possible. If they were to deploy $1 million on, say, 10 houses and then sit there on these 10 houses for 12 months, they'd ultimately be out of business for 12 months because they wouldn't have any more money to go buy any more opportunities for themselves. So one of the things that they do is they keep that option available, especially seasoned rehabbers and investors. The beauty of that is that for somebody like myself or somebody that was interested in learning about notes and how to make money either buying or flipping notes, when I got started in the business – I didn't have any money to buy notes. I didn't know really what a note was. And so I spent about a year's worth of time just going out and finding a person with a note. And I'd find a person that was selling a note, or I'm sorry, buying notes, and I would connect the two. And they'd pay me a nice little fee off of that. And the fees would range anywhere from 2 to 6%, depending upon each transaction. So I didn't have to, you know, because of my grassroots marketing strategies, I didn't have to go and spend a lot of money on marketing, and I didn't have to put out any capital to buy it. So the reality of everything I got was literally pure profit. And I was doing, I don't know, 4 to 8 of these a month back when I first got started. So very quickly, I figured out, well, wait a minute, I don't have to take any capital risk. All I have to do is talk to some people that are already telling me that this is what they have. When I go to Craigslist and I type in Phoenix and I say, okay, wait a minute, this guy's got a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage house for sale with owner financing. He's selling it for $100,000. He's requesting a 10% down payment. All it takes is one buyer to come along that likes the house and has the money to do that. And in doing so, he now has created a note that ultimately he's going to want to sell. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is in the note business, there's over 28 different mathematical equations that go into pricing out a note. Now, I'm not saying that to frighten anybody, but most people look at it, well, if I have a note, I have to sell the whole thing. And that's really not the truth. If you have a note, you can sell off, you can sell the whole thing, which is probably the most popular. But you can also sell a partial, which would mean maybe it's 360 months in term, and maybe you sell 180 months. You could sell just the balloon, which means if it was a 380-month note and it was a 7-year balloon, maybe you just sell 7 years' worth of payments. There's what they call a split partial and all kinds of other things. I won't spend a lot of time on today's call about that, but the point is that it can be used as a – you can literally, if you create a note, you can get your money back out of it and still create an annuity-style format that brings you residual income for years to come. And that really falls into the true category of working smarter, not harder, in the real estate business. The beauty of it for people listening to today's call, if you're one of those individuals that's creating notes, you know, I hope that, you know, hopefully you'll see some of those opportunities coming down the road. But if you're an individual that wants to just learn to broker notes or to flip notes, there's a lot of opportunity in that marketplace, especially with the new economy and the banks being tight-fisted with their money. You have to meet a very high-level lending criteria to get a traditional loan anymore. So the opportunities are now turning more towards owner financing for these investors to liquidate their real estate. And that falls both in the residential side of real estate as well as the commercial side of real estate. Now, something that people don't realize is that in the commercial arena, notes are very popular. The amount of financing in the commercial side of things is close to 50%+ and has been for years. You get into mobile homes, and that number is pretty high up there. I don't know the exact figure. You get into land, buying and selling of land, and owner financing is extremely popular in that arena as well. The amazing thing about this, and one of the reasons I wanted to do this call with you today, Brett, was to really just kind of, how do you say, for lack of a better word, stir the pot up a little bit, and to get people to start understanding to think outside the box in the world of real estate these days, and to continue to do so moving forward, because those are the people who are thinking outside the box that are going to be able to capitalize on today's marketplace. I see a lot of really, really smart, hardworking people who are trying to figure it out. And they're like, well, how can I go out and buy real estate? Well, go out and buy real estate with owner financing. You'll see if you go on Craigslist Phoenix, you'll see houses in there that are in need of repair. These are investors who own these houses. They're willing to own or finance it to somebody, let them do the cleanup work, the fix-up work, and then they can either keep it as a rental, which creates cash flow, or they can turn around and sell it at an improved price. So you can go out and buy real estate this way. And guess what? When you're buying real estate in that environment, you can go out, you can buy it under your corporation, under a family trust. You don't have to go through all the credit checks. You don't have to go through, give me copies of bank statements, give me copies of tax returns and things like that. All they're really looking forward or for in a buyer is, and this is the mindset of most investors, is do you have money to put down and can you afford the payment? And their mindset is if you don't make the payment, you're taking the property back, which is not necessarily the best spirit of putting a deal together, but I understand why they think that way. And I can appreciate why they think that way. In a bank's environment, they don't want the property back. You know, contrary to popular belief, with all the activity that the banks have been doing in the foreclosure arena, it's not their mantra on a daily basis to get up and go through and start foreclosing on properties, especially now that so many of the bailout programs have exhausted themselves. So now they really don't have anything to fall back on.
Well, as having bankers or banks as my primary clients and source of transactions, I can promise you they do not want to own. They do not want to own the property. They would rather not own it, you know, if it can be avoided at any cost, for sure.
Absolutely. You know, they, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, they're not in the real estate business. They're in the lending business. You know, Albert Einstein said, you know, the greatest invention of all time was compound interest. Banks understand that. And they understand, hey, if I lend you $100,000 to go buy this house, they're going to make X amount of money per month for the next 30 years, which is a stabilized business model under normal economy activity. An investor understands, hey, if I go borrow this $100,000 and I put $10,000 into this house, but I can sell it for $140,000, I can make myself $30,000 profit minus some closing costs and stuff like this. I'm in and out of this deal for $25,000 in 3 months. That's a motivator for an investor. So together, they make a great marriage as long as everybody does what they and gets what they want out of the relationship. Banks are not foolish to this. I mean, they've seen hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of closing statements. They know what the property owner's making on the deal. They know that, hey, if I go out and I lend $300,000 on this house and I see the closing statement and the seller just walked away with $250,000 profit because they owned the house for 10 years and it went up in value and all this other stuff, that doesn't hurt the feelings of a banker. That just doesn't hurt their feelings. They understand that's the business.
Sure.
And if they wanted to be in real estate, they'd go out and buy the house themselves. Or they'd go out and buy the building themselves. But that would require a whole nother business model. Instead, they focus on what can they make in interest returns on their money? How can they borrow it from the feds at this price, put it out to the marketplace at that price, and make the spreads? And then how do we ramp this up into the millions of loans, which is ultimately why we have the banking system that we do. Now, I've kind of got off on a tangent there in the traditional side of things, but that same thing is very true with me buying notes from investors. I understand, hey, if I want to go out and buy real estate, my goodness, I live in Arizona. It's the greatest market to go out and buy real estate and rehab real estate in because we've had just a plethora of foreclosures. We've had a huge decline in property values over the last several years. So I'm sitting right in the middle of a great opportunity. Yet I still don't go out and buy houses. I still don't rehab houses. And it's not because I'm anti-rehab and I'm anti-buying houses. What I'm looking for in my business model is I'm okay with them going out and buying a house for $50,000, putting 10 into it and selling it for 100, because in turn, the compound interest factor my rate of return on my money is much greater than what theirs would be, and they're getting theirs in a lump sum. I'm getting mine over time. I look at it as a methodology of working smarter, not harder, and that doesn't make it good or bad. My father's one that loves to go out and buy houses and fix them up. He enjoys that immensely. I'm, you know, not afraid of hard work. It just doesn't excite me like it excites him, if that makes any sense. So,
I'm with you. I'm much more interested in transacting than I am in managing or owning something in that way. So I'm definitely in your school of thought on that.
Yeah. And if you drive around, you can look at the different business models, and they're both lucrative business models. But when you drive around the country and you see downtown Phoenix or downtown Atlanta or downtown L.A., the largest, tallest buildings in those cities have a tendency to have a banking institution's name on it. And you look at it and you go, Okay, their model makes them a ton of money. Yet you don't see, Joe and Bob's rehab business in a high-rise building in downtown L.A. or downtown Phoenix. And that doesn't make that a bad business. It just means that that's they can only do so much, because if you look at most investors, their core area of influence is a city. Like when I'm dealing with Phoenix investors, 9 out of 10 of them only do business in the Phoenix Metroplex area. They don't go to California. They don't go to Las Vegas. They don't go to Colorado. They focus on the Phoenix area. Now, if they have a tendency to go to Las Vegas, that's because they went there and they're going there. They typically, you find out a brother-in-law or brother or something like that, took the business up there and he's working it there, kind of a thing. So the art of duplication is limited, because you can only be in so many places at so many times. Whereas the art of duplication in buying mortgages is nationwide. I buy notes in all 50 states from different investors and different sellers in all 50 states.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm not limited as far as my business model is concerned, yet a rehabber / investor is. Now, that doesn't make it right or wrong. Don't get me wrong. I live next door to some very wealthy real estate investors who did extremely well in buying onesie-twosie properties and turning them over. And, matter of fact, a gentleman in my church does that every day, and he's typically got 12 to 18 properties in inventory that he buys, rehabs, and sells. And he loves it, absolutely loves it, and does very well at it. And so hopefully that gives everybody a nice aerial view of what the business is really all about. But the simplicity of it is, and I'll sum this up real quick, is notes are just a glorified IOU. They're sellable they're both created from both investors and private parties and institutions. All of those parties that are creating these things are selling them. They sell them primarily to either Wall Street firms or private individuals with Roths and things of that nature. And then the fifth thing is if you're interested in either learning about notes, it's easy to do. And if you're interested in just making money off of brokering notes or flipping notes and getting a piece of the pie, that's also easy to do. And it doesn't cost any money. It doesn't cost any money. And that's how I got started in the note business to begin with. I didn't have money to go out and buy notes. I had to start at the bottom, for lack of better words, and learn the business and get my feet wet. Once I was able to do that, I was able to scale the business, go out, get credit lines and things of that nature.
But I like what you're talking about, because it really opens it up to folks who are, it's another way to skin the cat, and it's sort of another way to get going without having to have all that you need to get going with larger institutional size transactions. So that is, that's really cool, and I appreciate you bring that up. I'm going to, I know that I don't have too much time. Do we have a few more minutes for me to just pepper you with a couple of quick questions?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So just a couple of things that I wanted to ask. One, and these are sort of, these are very mechanical kind of things, but I'm fairly analytical myself, and I know some of the folks who are into the data and whatnot are like me. And so, you know, what I'd want to ask you is a couple of things. One is, how long do you typically hold a note? Like, what's a full engagement for you from the time that you acquire until the time that you're out? What kind of rates are you seeing, and are you still seeing that kind of IRR that you talked about before?
In the our typical hold time on performing loans is running right around just over 6 years. I still have some notes from back in when I got started, when I actually started buying loans, which is back in 1999, I think, was the year I bought my first note. So I still have notes from that time period as well. Amazingly enough, you know, the beauty of the note business is because there's very seldom is there ever a prepayment penalty on a deal. What I see time and time again is people kind of slide into a comfort position, comfort level. And even if their interest rate, I mean, I've got notes in my portfolio that have interest rates on them that are over 14%.
Wow.
From back in 1999. As a matter of fact, I was buying some deals from a guy who I learned a lot from, and every one of his notes were at 16% or higher interest rates. Wow. And I still have some of those, and they're rather small notes, you know, $30,000-$40,000. Balances is what they were when they started out, and people get into that comfort level. Okay, my payment's $400 a month, and I'm just going to keep making my $400 a month payment. And occasionally, you get somebody who figures out, hey, I can make a $500 a month payment and cut down the time frame. And then occasionally, you'll get people that'll just go out and refinance it or sell it altogether. So my standard holding time is in that 6 year range. As far as getting rates of return or what we're seeing, I'm actually in the process. After we're finished up here, I've got to reach out to a gentleman who sent me over a note that's out of Dallas, Texas. He's an investor, and he sold this house, carried back the financing, and he carried it back at 9.5% interest rate, 30-year term. The person's credit was 787.
Wow.
And maximum credit is 850. So to say that, hey, you know, you only buy notes on people that have bad credit is just not true. And this, to give you great insight to this, this gentleman's credit score is extremely high, but he only has one open account, and it's a little $300 or $400 credit card, which to me is hallelujah. I love it. You know, give me those people all day long because they're not riddled with all kinds of credit card debt and school loan debt and medical bill debt. And he can manage that payment every month for what he's doing and the income, and he also put money down. So that kind of gives you some insight on the level that people are still buying real estate at. Even back in the day when back in 04, 05 timeframe when interest rates were 4 or 5% and they're even lower – I'm still around that to this in this market, people are still doing owner financing that 8.5% to 10.5% interest rate range on 30-year terms with no prepayment penalty. So, and a lot of that insight just comes from me being in that business. You know, a great example is right now I'm coaching my son's soccer team, and yeah, I know what soccer is. Yeah, I mean, I've seen it on TV. You know, they play it over in Europe and stuff like that. I actually even played it when I was in elementary school and junior high when I was really young. But to go out, and I understood it. I knew it was there. But to go and coach it is a whole nother level of soccer. And so I'm having to kind of relearn all about soccer so I can better assist these young boys and girls on getting to be the best that they can be at that age. And so that same thing is true. I find that it's very similar with notes and stuff. People, we know about notes and mortgages. They're out there and stuff like that. But they don't really deeply understand it and the value of that. And so I see those kind of life lessons all the time. The as far as the rates of returns that we're seeing, typically on performing loans, we're buying those with yield spreads typically around the 13% range right now. There's an abundance of performing loans in the marketplace, both from institutions and investors. One of the reasons institutions are not selling them off to Wall Street like they used to is because Wall Street doesn't have the exit strategies that they used to. So that also leads to, as an institution, let's say they've got $50 billion to play with in lending capital. Well, if they can't put together good quality loans all the time and be able to sell those off, then ultimately, once they spend that kind of money, they're going to be out of business. And to give you an idea how quickly that kind of money can go, back in the day, back in September of 2007, were the last statistics I have from Countrywide, but back in September 2007, and this is after things started to fall off, the wheels started to fall off this train, Countrywide, on a monthly basis, was doing $65 billion a month in residential lending nationwide.
Wow.
$65 billion. That's just one company, one entity. Now, granted, they were at that point kind of the king of subprime lending, but that's just one company. You know, you start adding Wells Fargo, B of A, all the other companies out there, and that number just grows exponentially, which is probably why it got all the attention that it did when the wheels came off, because the numbers were staggering. Percentage-wise, when you look at it, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, when you look at the amount of foreclosures, the percentage of foreclosures nationwide is less than 9%. I think it's actually even down to about 7% right now. That means, whatever way you look at it, 91 to 93% of the people in their homes are still making their mortgage payments.
Sure.
That's a pretty good statistic. But the media kind of turned towards the smaller portion and embellished that and all that. But we'll save that for another topic. But
So I know you've got to get on to other business, and again, I really appreciate you coming on. And should we make some notes in the show notes and on the blog about how people can find you, or do you want to tell them where you're at?
We'll just make some notes on the blog, but I also leave it here as well. They can reach me at www.tentacle-investments.com. Or better yet, I'd love to get back with you, and maybe we can talk about some other opportunities with you and your students and how they can actually go out and get involved in the note business and not have to use any money. But if they've got some time and some desire, I can show them how to get involved like I did. And I ended up going from literally nothing in the note business to turning it into a private equity fund that was worth almost $50 million when I sold it. And so, opportunity is still there. Opportunity is greater today than it used to be honest with you, because the banks are helping us out. They've actually become our allies in things. So that's a good thing.
Well, that is great. And we'd love to have you back. And it's been really interesting call, and a lot of times I spend time on the phone sort of chatting about things that I know a lot about, but today you opened my eyes to some alternatives that I had never even really occurred to me. So it's great. I appreciate it, and it's a time definitely well spent for me, and I hope for all of our listeners too.
Wonderful. Well, it's been my honor to be here with everybody. I hope I've left you guys with at least something to think about, another alternative to real estate investing, another way of selling the properties if you've got properties to sell. or another way of buying properties if you're one of those investors that likes buying properties as well. There's so many things you can do. You know, if I leave you guys with anything, you know, when you drive down the road, and this is how I view real estate, when I drive through a neighborhood or through a city or a major thoroughfare, all I see, most people see buildings and houses. All I see are notes on every single building.
That's great. Out there. Love that.
Yeah. So it's financed by somebody. Even the fancy hotels and everything else are financed by somebody. And I leave you guys with that. If anything, it'll give you something to think about today. With that being said, I hope everybody has a great day, a wonderful week. Be blessed. Take care, everybody.
Well, awesome, Troy. Thanks a lot.